Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sidorek.
I asked the city of Boston why all of a sudden they took notice recently. That's the challenge I put to the city of Boston. This has been going on for years. Where have they been?
That's South End resident Jonathan Alvis speaking at a community meeting last week. That meeting came after a tumultuous week in the neighborhood. First, an attack on a Suffolk County House of Corrections officer, then a Boston Police Department action called Operation Clean Sweep, which resulted in 34 arrests. Many South End residents say Operation Clean Sweep was long overdue in a neighborhood that's experiencing a rise in crime, but activists say it further stigmatized a vulnerable population and displaced many from their treatment and their community. Boston City Councilor Anissa Saibi-George is in our studios. She's the chair of the Committee on Homelessness, Mental Health, and Recovery. Councilor Saibi-George, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for the invitation.
And also with us on the line is George Sturgios, president of the Worcester Square Area Neighborhood Association in the South End. George, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And listeners, we want to bring you in this on as well. Whether you live in the South End or not, has addiction affected your neighborhood or your town's public spaces? And what can we do about it? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. George, I want to start with you. As I just mentioned, many people in the South End felt Operation Clean Sweep was necessary, maybe even overdue. Can you give us a little bit of context in terms of what's been going on in the neighborhood?
Well, this has been certainly the worst year for us. We've had a lot of problems since, I think, 2013, when the city, without contacting us, without any sort of effort and outreach, opened up a needle exchange, one of two and by far the largest needle exchange, one block away from us on Albany Street. And since then, we've seen needles, we've seen addicts. I mean, obviously, you bring in a needle exchange, you're trying to attract addicts, and addicts are prey for dealers. So we became the open-air drug market for the city and the state, for that matter. And there's people coming from beyond the state. This is where to go for your drugs. And we've seen an increase. I think every year, the last couple of years, it seemed to plateau. This year, it really increased. We've seen a major increase of people pooping on our property, peeing in our property, leaving needles, passing out. You can see people shooting up on any stoop in Worcester Square. And Worcester Square,
not just that, George. Sorry to cut you off, but I just want to add that according to the Boston Globe, robberies and aggravated assaults are up 41% in the quarter mile area around the intersection of Mass Ave and Milnea Cass Boulevard. Why do you think this year there's been such a sharp uptick?
Okay. There's various explanations. One, which I think is Steve Fox from South End Forum has offered, and I mentioned to Barry Bach, who's the CEO of Healthcare for the Homeless, seemed to confirm it. Fentanyl, that let's say a couple of years ago, people were shooting heroin, and once in a while they got fentanyl instead of heroin, and they overdosed. What's happened now is people are just shooting fentanyl, and they know it's fentanyl. They still occasionally overdose, but the problem is with heroin, you have to shoot up, if you're like a full-bore addict, two or three times a day. With fentanyl, you have to shoot up every 2 hours. So you don't go. The people in the past were going to the homeless shelter. They were going to what they call the engagement center. They were able to go to facilities. They're just on the street now. They're sleeping on the street. They're hanging out on the street. They're there 24 hours a day because they can't go anywhere. They can't. You go to the homeless shelter, you have to give up your drugs. They can't wait 8 hours to shoot up again.
All right. So that's. Yeah, that's a great point. I want to bring in Councillor Saibi-George. What do you make of that, Councillor?
Well, I think what George is seeing is certainly a response to the crisis. We have what we're dealing with here in the city of Boston is certainly that, a crisis, and it's of epic proportions here in the city. And from my perspective as chair of the Committee on Homelessness, Mental Health, and Recovery, as an elected official, city councillor, the pressure that this crisis is putting on our systems throughout our city, not just in the Mass and Cass area and the South End area, but throughout our system, our city, is really breaking the back of the work that needs to happen day in and day out. And George mentioned some changes that have happened 2013, 2014. Certainly, there's lots of reasons and excuses for this uptick to have happened in our city. The closing of the Long Island Bridge and some of the support services that were out there that were so important and critical to the well-being of lots of individuals went away. We continue to work on rebuilding the Long Island Bridge. But like George said, the change in the drugs and what we've seen since 2013 and 14 in particular is the rise in synthetic opioids and the way that their use is different than, you know, pure heroin. And that has really impacted the life and the quality of life for someone who's dealing with substance use disorders. And as a city councilor, our work is around protecting residents, protecting our neighbors and our communities, but also working to make sure that there's a high quality of life for the person who's dealing with substance use disorders.
Yeah, there really is an interesting, a challenging balance here. I want to play a cut from Jada Ricard. She's an 11-year-old student. She spoke at that community meeting last Wednesday really powerfully. I want to take a listen here.
This is not fair. Please tell me, where is my safety? We have seen people shooting up on the streets, and we have seen people having inappropriate actions, and nothing has been done. And now that a correction officer has been assaulted, now you are doing something?
So, counselor, there's, I think, a real pull and tug here about the needs and the issues that the residents are facing, and also this vulnerable population. Those who are homeless or suffering from addiction, how do you balance that?
Well, it's certainly complex, as is the problem. But I would say this work, especially since I joined the council in 2016 and started to chair this newer committee, it was founded when I took office in 2016 on homelessness, mental health, and recovery. We know that there is often a very direct intersect between homelessness, between those experiencing mental health challenges and substance use disorders. So that work has to be a coordinated effort in many ways. And this, what's happened in the last few weeks, I think has elevated everyone's attention to the issue. But there have been many of us that have continued to do this work day in and day out, month after month and year after year. We just have this opportunity to elevate it to a different level of conversation for sure. But there's all of these other issues that come along with this. And, you know, I think about Operation Clean Sweep and what happened a few weeks ago. My greatest concern is the individual who has been pushed out of sort of that mass and cast area. Where have they ended up? What's the continuum of care for them? What are the other new impacts that our communities are facing as a certain population that is difficult, that does have complex challenges, is dealing with? How are we responding to the needs of those communities and the needs of those individuals? And that's residents, that's business owners, that's students and school children, as we heard from that young woman right there who's been very well-spoken at many of our hearings across the city.
Yeah. George, I want to bring you back in on this Operation Clean Sweep just about a week and a half ago. What did you make of the police action? Was it necessary, disruptive to the community, somewhere in between? What did you think?
Well, we had a bigger police presence for several weeks before that, basically partly because we were calling so much, 911, just reporting things. Because, as I said, there was a sense that the police had lost control of our area. One example, which I think sums it all up, owner of one of the local restaurants told me about a police officer who walked out of his restaurant with a slice of pizza and found a woman shooting up, leaning back against his squad car. So there was a sense of, like, total anarchy. People were going to do whatever they're going to do. And a lot of us put pressure on the police to say, look, we cannot handle this anymore. I think a police action, a police raid, like what you saw with Operation Clean Sweep, should always be the last resort. But I think in this case, it was a last resort that was needed. I mean, there was somebody who was beaten by a number of people. And there was, again, there is a complete anarchy out there. Again, one thing other people have mentioned is that there's a greater, there's a lot more methamphetamines out there, which causes heroin. People tend not to be violent. They tend to fall down. But with methamphetamines, you're getting a lot more violence. So I think there really is a problem. The police, what they told us, is they were looking to get rid of the troublemakers. They're not looking to disperse everyone, but they're looking to get the people out of there who are dealing drugs, who are causing trouble, we know a lot of you talk to homeless people, and they say they don't go there. They don't go to the homeless shelter anymore because they don't want to walk down that road. So it had gotten bad enough there where homeless people addicts, mentally ill people who should be in the homeless shelter no longer want to go there because they felt it was dangerous or they're going to be tempted by drugs. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a sad scene. It's a sad event when you have to bring the police in at that level. But as I said, there was a real feeling that we had lost, that the police had lost complete control of the street and anything went. You could do anything anywhere.
Yeah, so there's two schools of thought on this. 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK if you want to join the conversation. We spoke with Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins on the show on Friday. And she had some concerns with the action, especially using the word sweep. There were some striking similarities between that. It happened almost at the same time as the ICE raids going on in Mississippi. Here's what she said.
You know, on the one side, we're talking about the importance of law enforcement and community having great relationships. That's what the mayor, the commissioner, and I were saying. Out of the same side of our mouths, we are sweeping people up. It's really sad. And words, you know, They called it a sweep as well, and although it's not overwhelmingly immigrants in this circumstance, it's a very similar situation, I believe.
So, Councilor Asaibi George, I want to ask you, you heard George's concerns about what's going on in the neighborhood. How do you balance and how do you create this relationship of trust and cooperation with law enforcement while at the same time not letting the situation be anarchy?
Well, it is a complex situation, and George is very vocal about the challenges that many of the residents in the South End face. But he's also articulating what many of our residents are facing across the city, because this touches everyone. There's very few people it doesn't touch. But it really speaks to the larger concerns and the larger needs. That's more recovery beds. A week ago now, I was at drug court and I met with one of our judges and some community advocates about getting individuals who are dealing with addiction into recovery. And detox isn't a problem, but for every 30 individuals who are looking for recovery, there's one bed available. That's real work that we need to do. And until we're able to help those 29 folks that are looking for a place to find sobriety, to find a lifetime of recovery, we're not going to have a handle on this situation. And it is just going to be a quick Band-Aid, a little bit of survival. The real work needs to happen. It needs to happen in partnership. And it's going to have to come at the... We have to fulfill the capacity needs across the district, across the city.
And that's a point that we heard from Mayor Walsh. We heard from Boston Police Commissioner William Gross. We heard from we spoke actually today with Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins. And everyone is talking about, yes, we need more facilities. We need more beds. How do we make that happen? I mean, that requires serious funding. Where does that come from?
Well, part of it comes from the response at the state level. Today, I held a working session to meet with my colleagues. The city council is bound by open meeting law, so we have to file an ordinance in order to meet as a group. We did that this afternoon, and we do it in partnership with the state delegation. We need them involved in this work, too, because it's not just a Boston problem. Although we deal with a lot of pressures from this crisis and from this epidemic, we need recovery beds across the Commonwealth. We need recovery beds across the region. We know that 60% of individuals that are appearing at our homeless shelters, not a very direct correlation, but a connected one nevertheless. We know that 60% are not from the city of Boston, and many of them are not from Massachusetts. This has to be a regional response. So it's a financial burden for all of us to bear, but we need to do it because doing it the way we are right now is more expensive in the long run financially and the human toll.
But how do you compel communities that aren't seeing this problem in their backyards to throw money into the pot to help deal with the solutions?
Well, we've asked for them to make it a part of their work in their own backyard. A lot of systems have shut down. Systems of care have shut down in surrounding cities and towns, putting more and more pressure on the city of Boston. We can identify through community of origin and front door triage data where individuals are coming from. And for me, it's about getting these communities to do more of the work themselves, but also financially helping the city of Boston do some of this work, because it does cost money.
But that's a tough sell. How do you convince
these
a community
are their residents
to do that?
I mean, it's a difficult
other than
sell,
saying please,
but it's please, but these are our brothers and sisters. These are our sons and daughters. These are our mothers and fathers. These are our next door neighbors that are all suffering from this crisis. It leaves no family untouched. And that's the piece that we need to tap into, that it's everyone's responsibility. These are our residents. These are our neighbors. These are our friends and our family. We have to do this work. And we have to work as elected officials and as advocates to compel an interest in doing this work by state lawmakers across the state and across the region.
I think most folks agree the way we're dealing with it right now is not effective enough. There have been some different out-of-the-box type solutions talked about. I want to go to a couple of callers here. Kelly from the South Shore. Kelly, welcome to Radio Boston. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. What do you think?
So I work in the addiction treatment field in a harm reduction clinic. And I just wanted to comment on, what are we going to learn as a society that we can't arrest our way out of the opioid epidemic? We really need more access to treatment, access to beds. We need to open the treatment facilities on the Long Island shelters. And I also think that a supervised consumption site would greatly reduce the issues that we've been seeing in the Mass Ave area.
Yeah, Kelly, thanks. Kelly, thanks for the call. Ed from Medford, welcome to Radio Boston. Ed, what's on your mind?
We always, act like we're the only city in the world that has this problem. What are they doing in New York? What are they doing in Los Angeles? Are they having this rise in fentanyl, which is just obscene? How are they handling these issues?
So it's an interesting question, Ed, and I can't speak specifically to New York and L.A., but, Counselor, I know you actually traveled to Canada to observe some of these consumption sites, supervised consumption sites. What did you make of what you saw?
Sure. I went last year to Vancouver, and in a few weeks I'm heading to Toronto. They have two very different models in practice. For a while, lots of the advocates had been proposing a Vancouver-like model. I went to Vancouver. I was very disappointed in what I saw. I'm hopeful that Toronto will show me something a little bit different. I am on the record opposed to safe consumption or safe injection sites, but I do think they can offer us some insight into helping individuals who are sick, who are dealing with a disease, who are dealing with addiction, find treatment, find recovery, find a lifetime of recovery, of sobriety, and I look forward to doing that. But I think it's also interesting to understand the different regional problems in the states and internationally. When we look at this drug crisis, it's the types of drugs that are appearing. So we see something a little bit different here in the Northeast, and we are preparing for this next wave, this change in drugs and the way that they're mixed, sort of the cocktails that are created on the street. And how do we respond as a city, as a health commission, as public health providers? How are we responding to that change in drugs? And they see something a little bit different on the West Coast, something different in the South.
Yeah. I want to bring George Sergios back in here from the Worcester Square Area Neighborhood Association. George, what do you make of this concept of supervised consumption sites?
You know, what I think is striking is Canada started its first safe injection site, I think, in 2003. But in 1963, it started allowing methadone to be prescribed by doctors. Not everything. Methadone has to be clinic-based now, which means there's 1,300 people every day who drive to the South End from all over the state to get their methadone. Some of them get in trouble afterwards. They get their methadone, they start mixing other drugs, mixing with people, getting themselves in trouble. Most of them go back to work or go to work or go back to their homes. So I think that Canada for 40 years was prescribing methadone out of pharmacies. You could pick that up at a pharmacy or at a doctor's office. The same with Australia. 30 years before they opened their first safe injection site, they had methadone prescribed from doctor's offices or from pharmacies. That's the same case with Germany. 10 years before they opened their first safe injection facility, they were prescribing methadone. I think this is a huge key. That if you let people, the first most important thing is most of the people who are addicted want to get off. The easiest way to get off, to get sober, is through medically assisted treatment, whether it's methadone or Suboxone. We should be concentrating on that 90% who want to be sober. Once we clean that up, once we've taken care of those people, then we should concentrate on that 5 or 10% who are going to shoot up for the rest of their lives for whatever psychological, mental reasons.
All right. Sorry to cut you there, George, but that's George Sturgios, president of the Worcester Square Area Neighborhood Association in the South End. George, thanks so much for the time.
You're welcome.
And also with us, Boston City Councilor Anissa Saibi-George. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.